Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Lizzie and Justin. And we are here once again for Turning Towards Life with a wonderful source by the incredible George Saunders from a book called A Swim in the Pond in the Rain, chosen by Justin, geniusly chosen by Justin. Thank you, Justin, for always choosing our wonderful sources for us in the way that you do. Always different to mine, ones I never would have thought of bringing. So I feel ever grateful for that. And also just the same old gratitude of coming here and feeling the precipice of the conversation, the excitement that I feel every time. Where are we going to go? And what are we going to say? And what's going to happen? And what are we going to feel as we enter into this? I had a conversation, Justin, this week with somebody who listened to last week's episode. And it really is a conversation happening beyond us. Because, of course, and I think we maybe said this last week or the week before, there is a response in everybody in the listening. And then when I get to hear any of that response to what we've been saying by way of a conversation outside of you and I here, it just shows me how much of a conversation is being generated in the world, in people's inner worlds and between people. If they listen together, or they listen individually and then talk about it, or they just listen on their own and they're in a dialogue inside of themselves about what we're bringing and saying. So I'm really in appreciation of the size of the conversation, actually, and in how many systems, how many human systems it belongs. I'm really grateful to be continuing on as we do each week and hearing from people. I love hearing from people who've listened. I'm so excited and intrigued and energized when I hear and I'm in conversation about what this means to people. So thank you, everybody who's been in contact with us recently. It's wonderful. And as ever, please just do the thing and be in touch with us. We love to hear from you. And good morning, good afternoon, Justin.
Hey, Lizzie. I'm really pleased to be here too. I'll just pick up on what you just said immediately to say if you're with us and you do want to be in touch with us, one way is to join our Facebook group. Just search for Turning Towards Life and ask to join. But the other way, the sort of really direct way, is you can email us. Hello@turningtowards.life is the way that reaches both of us, or Justin or Lizzie. Lizzie at turningtowards.life will reach each of us. And it really is wonderful to hear from people. And I'm thinking as we head into this source, Lizzie, just to say for anyone who is new to Turning Towards Life, we always begin with a source. And our conversation, yours and mine, Lizzie, is first it's a response to the call that the source makes, and then it's a response to one another. And we know, as you've been saying, that inevitably what happens when those of you who are with us listen is that there are responses arising in you too. So we're genuinely in call and response with one another. And that's the whole very simple premise of this very long conversation. We're on our 379th conversation in this series, and they're all available at turningtowards.life on the web. And if you subscribe on a podcast and you can go back, there we've talked about a lot of things over this time. We've also repeatedly talked, in a way, talked about one thing, which is about how we might enter into our lives with depth and integrity and creativity and responsiveness and all the things it takes to be alive at this time. I'm very, very grateful to George Saunders. This source we're about to read comes from his book, A Swim in the Pond in the Rain, which I heartily recommend. It's a series of Russian short stories by famous Russian authors Tolstoy and Tolstoy, actually, at the moment, is the only person I remember, Gogol. But what happens is you get to read the story, and then you get to read George Saunders's response to the story. So actually, Lizzie, the structure of that book is like the structure of Turning Towards Life. He's got a source, and then he responds to the source. So this is from a chapter near the end of the book, which is the response to a story. And it's a wonderful response. And this part, as many parts of this, really touched me, and I thought it would be good for us to begin with. So you can find the source in the podcast show notes. You can find it on the turningtowards.life website, along with all the videos, and we're on YouTube, and then we're in all the podcast places, Apple and Spotify and Google Podcasts and all of those. So you can always find it there. It's called It's Hard to Be Alive. Every human position has a problem with it. Believed in too much, it slides into error. It's not that no position is correct, it's that no position is correct for long. We're perpetually slipping out of absolute virtue and failing to notice, blinded by our desire to settle in, to finally stop fretting about things and relax forever and just be correct, to find an agenda and stick with it. It's hard to be alive. The anxiety of living makes us want to judge, be sure, have a stance, definitively decide. Having a fixed, rigid system of belief can be a great relief. Wouldn't it be nice to just decide to live as an anti-happiness zealot? Completely consistent, you'll never need to be confused again. You can just stalk around, having sold your bathing suit, looking down your nose at everything. For that matter, wouldn't it be nice to just throw down on the side of being happy? To decide to live life as an ardent pro-happiness advocate, always striving to celebrate, dance, have fun, maximize your joy. But then, before you know it, you're obnoxious on Instagram, standing in a waterfall with a garland of flowers, thanking God for blessing you with this wonderful life you must somehow have earned via your immaculate mindfulness. As long as we don't decide, we allow further information to keep coming in. It reminds us that any question in the form, is X right or wrong, could benefit from another round of clarifying questions. Question: is X good or bad? Story: for whom? On what day? Under what conditions? Might there be some unintended consequences associated with X? Some good hidden in the bad that is X, some bad hidden in the good that is X. Tell me more.
Every human position has a problem with it. Believed in too much, it slides into error. It's not that no position is correct, it's that no position is correct for long. We are perpetually slipping out of absolute virtue and falling into notice, and failing to notice, blinded by our desire to settle in. To finally stop fretting about things and relax forever and just be correct. We find an agenda and stick with it. It's hard to be alive. The anxiety of living makes us want to judge, to be sure, have a stance, definitively decide. Having a fixed, rigid system of belief can be a great relief. Wouldn't it be nice to just decide to live as an anti-happiness zealot? Completely consistent, you'll never need to be confused again. You can just stalk around, having sold your bathing suit, looking down your nose at everything. For that matter, wouldn't it be nice just to throw down on the side of being happy, to decide to live life as an ardent pro-happiness advocate, always striving to celebrate, dance, have fun, maximize your joy. But then, before you know it, you're obnoxious on Instagram, standing in a waterfall with a garland of flowers, thanking God for blessing you with this wonderful life you must have somehow earned via your immaculate mindfulness. As long as we don't decide, we allow further information to keep coming in. It reminds us that any question in the form of, is X right or wrong, could benefit from another round of clarifying questions. Question: is X good or bad? Story: for whom? On what day? Under what conditions? Might there be some unintended consequences associated with X? Some good hidden in the bad that is X, some bad hidden in the good that is X. Tell me more.
Thanks, Lizzie. It's wonderful hearing this read, actually, just to sort of feel it in a human voice. There's lots to say, and I suppose one of the reasons why this particular source spoke to me so quickly is I think at this point in history, so beginning of 2025, who knows when anybody might be listening to this conversation, Lizzie, one of the things that we are really wrestling with in the world is sort of like an explosion of certainty. The polarization of beliefs and the rigidity around them and the conflict and distance that comes from absolutely knowing that to be, you know, on the political left or the political right, or to think that this is the correct thing and, or that's the wrong thing or whatever it is, our absolute certainty is making it incredibly difficult for us to hear one another. So that's sort of the macro picture. Mm. But of course, I notice how much that shapes me. I notice when I get angry, when I get fearful, particularly when I get fearful, it's very often that I've taken up one of these stories, these positions that George Saunders warns us about, where I'm absolutely certain that something is the case in a very particular way, mm-hmm. and that is the only way to see it. And once I see it in that way, there's no other way of seeing it. And I loved what he said about, at the beginning of this, about how the truth is that no position is, many positions have a lot of truth in them, but they don't stay true. They don't stay true for long when we actually start to look at them. But how good it feels to be, what's the way he said it? The rigidity, having a fixed, rigid system of belief can be a great relief. Can be a great relief to our anxiety. It can be a great relief for our, how hard it is to deal with how complex the world is and how complex people are and how mysterious everything is. And I noticed that in me, it may not be a pleasant feeling to feel fixed and rigid, but it certainly feels, it's not filled with anxiety. It's not filled with the anxiety, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. It's like a salve for that anxiety. And I'm really glad he names it that way, because I think it would be really easy to have a position that having a position is a bad thing and we ought to judge everybody who has a position. And I think I want to start off by saying thank you, George, for pointing out to us that very often we have a fixed position, mostly because we're scared. And until we start to see that we're holding on really tight because we're frightened of what would happen if we didn't, till we can start to see that, it's really difficult to start to soften in ourselves and to ask the questions that George asks at the end. But it's also really difficult to begin to talk to one another, because I notice that I might think I'm a person without fixed positions. And then I meet you, Lizzie, and you've got a fixed position. And now I'm absolutely certain that you're wrong because of your fixed position. And that's just a fixed position in me. There's so much softening into what we don't yet know that's called for in order to really meet ourselves and one another when all of this is going on.
I too am super appreciative of this connection of anxiety with the being sure and the judging and having a stance, and feeling really grateful that this invitation that George is making to me right now, of when I am in my stance and I am definitive and I do feel sure about something, to check my anxiety levels. Like, what got me here? Is this a place I'm taking up out of softness and flexibility and wondering? Or is this a place that has got stiffness in it and panic inside of it, that I have to stand here, otherwise everything is up for grabs and everything is too big for me? So I'm grateful for this connection, so that I can notice whether there's anxiety there when I'm taking a stand for something. And then me, instead of carrying on my argument, I can go, I think I might be a bit anxious here and about goodness knows what. Maybe anxious about being in the conversation with you in the first place, or anxious about something underlying which is overwhelming me, which means I can't really be with complexity right now because actually I've got too much overwhelm in my life. But at least what it does is it points me towards something truer for my reflection, rather than just keeping on hammering home what my stance is or something. And I notice there's a lot of discomfort for me in the kind of debating conversation that happens in the world, like people having an argument with each other about some concept in the world or some belief or something. And I'm feeling into how much more life-giving it would feel if people, if we around a table could have this curiosity mixed with our stance. So as you're saying, like, to not throw stance taking out as if it's something bad, but to not let that be the end of the story. Even to take our stand as an experiment, to say, well, I'm going to stand on this opinion. I'm going to be here and I'm going to see what it's like and I'm going to defend it and I'm going to ask questions of it and I'm going to fully stand in this belief in the knowledge that I'm going to stand outside of it in a minute and see whether it still stands up in the spirit of things not lasting as correct for long, given context changes, given time changes, given 100,000 things. So I'm really appreciating the kind of the mobility in this, and that just because you stood somewhere doesn't mean you always have to stand there. And in a way, I can feel the vulnerability of that, of saying, actually, I don't think that anymore. I've changed the way I think. I think culturally, we're kind of expected to take a stand and then that's our stand forever and ever or something because of all of this. And so to be a person who says, I've changed my mind. Like in politics, for example, if somebody changes their mind, they get completely ripped to shreds for it. Well, you said this on the 27th of November, 1920 something, and now you're saying this. Account for that. It's like we're not allowed in our media, like that is telling us all the time, if we're listening to any journalism and any kind of cultural commentary, we're not allowed to have this mobility without being ridiculed. So it's actually quite scary and quite frightening that we've got to have some kind of underlying robustness to kind of come with something completely different. So, like, I think that this is one of the big problems in the world, Justin, is it's really hard for people to say, I went away and I learned something and I'm coming back different. Like, somehow I don't hear that very often. I took a stand. I then opened myself. I felt my mobility, stood somewhere else, and now I can see things differently. And I'd love to say that to you. It's like, that's really kind of unusual to hear. And I can feel how vulnerable it would be for me to do that as well, of course. And I'm taking this as a hopeful kind of beacon of what's possible, which is that we can put down where we stand and we can take somewhere else up and we can see the world from different places. And it can be safe and okay and valuable and important, and the thing to do, the right thing to do, is to be mobile in our views and to see it from different places and stand in different positions, so that we aren't in this every human position has a problem stuck in it, but that we are, that we can migrate and stand and learn.
There's so much in what you're saying, Lizzie, to respond to. I think the first thing that's happening in me is thinking afresh about what we do for one another around this. So there's the, what seems to me you're pointing us to is that there's the difficulty that we each have, which is that we might, just to quote George Saunders again, he says every human position has a problem with it, but it's not that no position is correct. It's that if we hold on to them for too long and too tightly, that we slide into error where we're absolutely sure. And I was thinking about, we've talked a lot about parenting, you know, I was thinking a lot about, you know, rules about parenting. Every child should dot, 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 dot. And there might be wisdom in that every child should. But then you actually have to look, is it true for this person, for this child at this time in this context?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it always good? Might there be bad in the good? Might there be good in the bad, apparent bad in the other position about what it is? You know, every child should have a, what's the word, a structured bedtime or something. You can start to see this. And it's really important. I think this is what we're both doing here. It's really important not to say that nobody should have a position on anything. Like, having positions on things really matters. But holding it with a flexibility and these fabulous questions at the end, there might be bad in this good, there might be good in something else. I think bad, it might, be different in different contexts. That move itself is an enormous liberation, is to see that what's true is contextual,
mm-hmm.
and different for different people at different times.
Mm-hmm.
But then you said something that really struck me. You said, when we change our position, it's a vulnerable thing to do, particularly if we've been very emphatic about a position beforehand, like this is right. And then we go, actually, I've looked at it, it's more complicated than that. I think usually what we do if we're doing this well is we don't go, I was completely wrong and now this other side is right, because that might just be moving to another position with the same kind of rigidity and limit. But when we start to say, you know, there's a bigger picture here, it's a vulnerable and tender thing to do, and we might feel ashamed about it. And part of the work that we each have to do to be someone who can do that, who can see it from a number of different angles, is to get more kinder to ourselves around our shame, around our embarrassment, around the self-criticism that we might have of the person that we were when we held onto that very strong position. And as you pointed to us, there's a lot we can do with one another that makes that possible. So the surrounding situation where people in the public eye are vilified for changing their minds on things. And I don't mean wantonly just jumping from one opinion to another. I mean, when people are thoughtful and say, I've really thought about this and now I see it in a different way, as you say, in the public eye, people very often get vilified for it. And on social media, people very often get vilified for changing a position. So everything that you've said opens up for me this question, which is, can we each, as we work with our willingness to deepen our understanding of the positions we take and give them some flexibility where it's called for and really examine them, as well as working with ourselves, can we work on welcoming one another? Can I work on welcoming you when you change? Because part of what makes it hard for you to change is my demand. It's really another kind of position, like George is saying. I know you, Lizzie. I know what you think. I know the kind of person you are. Don't you ever surprise me by having a different point of view or being different with me than the way that you were yesterday.
Mm.
And that itself is a way that we try and keep ourselves safe. I'm going to keep myself safe by making sure that you never surprise me by having a, you're my friend, so that we agree, don't we? And then you have a different position. Now I've got to deal with you being different.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what we do because we're anxious, if we're not looking at the anxiety, is we stop one another from being more complex and from changing.
Yeah.
And we all change all the time. Like maybe it's one of the things that would be so good for us to remember is to be a human being, is to be an unfolding, changing something. Just like if you plant a sunflower seed, you wouldn't want it to stay a tiny little sprout. You'd want it to change into a sunflower.
Mm.
You'd go down, you say, oh, how wonderful, sunflower. Your petals are coming out and we welcome it there. But it takes a certain kind of courage and patience and readiness and flexibility in ourselves to welcome one another's becoming, which is everything that's required for us to respond to George.
Mm. I'm feeling into Justin this possibility of relationship where you turn up and say, I'm here and I'm being myself and I'm also willing to be changed by the things that you say. And I also turn up and say, I'm willing to be changed by the things that you say or the ways that you act or whatever. And the field of that, the kind of the realm of that relationship suddenly feels completely compelling to me. Like, oh, well, then what could it be? Like, what could this turn into? That there's an aliveness between us. Like you're saying, you and your sunflowerness in terms of your evolution and your blossoming, you're flourishing, you're coming out of seed into flower and everything that is involved in between, and me at the same time is suddenly a very different picture than you're you, I'm me, you're just the way that you are, I'm just the way that I am, and hopefully we're going to get on. It's like, they're just two really different pictures to me. And I'm feeling the possibility in mutual evolutionary relatingness, where the kind of the discipline between us, if you like, is to be guided by this that George is inviting us into, which is if we're both working on our anxiety and watching it and practicing our way into nervous systems that are more relaxed and can be with complexity more and more, we can be with each other's complexity even more. We can perceive each other's complexity even more. We can tolerate it. We can wonder. We can be curious. We can see rather than be sure about each other. It's reminding me of you talking about being married to the same person for decades and then still waking up in the morning going, I have no idea who you are. Really? I know that you like your tea a certain way and that this is how you fold your clothes and da-da-da-da-da. But really, the complexity of another human is so huge, is so massive, that we're never going to be able to behave really, if we have integrity and honesty about the nature of each human that exists. We're never going to be in that kind of you're you and I'm me and that's that. That feels dishonest in this moment to me. It feels like it doesn't have substance to it. What does feel like it has substance is that I haven't got a clue who you are. I haven't got a clue who I am. Let's see who we are today, maybe if we can. Like, that feels more honest to me, given the possibilities in each of us, the vastness of each of us, that we could wake up 30 years down the line and suddenly something different could happen, or every day be different somehow. And we are different every day. And we do owe it to one another to see who we are this day, rather than think that who we were yesterday was who we are today, and take that as our starting point.
It's the difference that it seems to me that you're describing between seeing one another as fixed things, which is very reassuring, and the radical possibility of seeing one another as living processes, always unfolding, always changing. And I loved what you said about, can I be soft and impressionable enough to let myself be changed by being with you? And can you let yourself be changed by being with me? And that also takes something that is requires some attention in both of us, because I might worry that if I'm going to be changed by you, that I'd lose myself. You know, some of us collapse, we get too small in the presence of others. So there are others of us, by the way, I think it's worth saying, and I've certainly have this sometimes, is I don't know anything about what I think. I'll just talk to Lizzie, and then I'll talk to Lizzie, and then I'll just what I think will be what you think. In other words, I give up my own integrity and my own center. And I think sometimes we get worried that that's what's going to happen, or we know that we've done that in the past. And so then in response, we get rigid. Well, I won't be, I'll just hold my position. But in thinking, it's a little bit like I once heard the distinction between a position and a stand being made. Like, a position is like, I'm going to be right here. And a stand is more like, here's what I'm committed to. Here are the values and principles that I'm committed to in my life. And I can move and take many positions inside that. And then if I don't get too big, like I'm just going to get stuck and try to dominate you and make sure that you stay the same and you never change. And if I don't get too small and just sort of give up on myself every time you say something, there's an exquisite kind of to and fro between the center that I am and the center that you are, like the centeredness that I am and the centeredness that you are, in which I can both be me with all of my history and all of my values and everything that I'm committed to. And I can be with you, and I can be changed by you as I'm with you. And it's a bit like willow trees bending in the wind in response to one another or something. Now, sometimes I may really move my stand. I may listen to you and be so affected by what you have to say that the center of me moves somewhere else. But before that, there's a kind of an interchange between the centeredness of two people that can happen, where we're giving and taking and listening and being changed by and not giving up on ourselves. And that was what struck me. It really helps for us to attend to is, can I be me whilst being changed by you?
Mm.
Both of those, holding both of those at the same time.
Mm. Yes, you can. Here. And
yes, of course.
I feel changed all the time by the things that you say, Justin, and that's been happening for a long time. And I think what I can feel, though, is that when, just to speak of this context that's truthful in this moment, when you speak and I find my curiosity and openness to what you're saying and I trust you, I let myself fully stand where you're standing, if you know what I mean. And then I come back to my stand and see how my stand is changed because of having stood where you stand. Like, as in, it's possible to be mobile in myself. Like, I can say, okay, well, let me think how Justin's explaining to me the way that he's thinking right now and what your view is. Let me imagine what it feels like to be there and then return to the place and feel how different that place is now I've included your stand in it. And of course, it's like infinitely complex. And goodness knows, I have so many moments where I think, oh gosh, I think I just need to like do something really simple, like stick labels on envelopes or something for a good few weeks to kind of, I don't know, recoil from the complexity or something, just to kind of take care of myself a bit. Because I do find that the more I open, the more complex life becomes. But then I wouldn't have it any other way. It's a bit like you kind of can't unsee something you've seen. It is the nature of life. Complexity is the nature of being a human and being in relationship and being in bigger systems and being in a family and doing things in the world. And so whilst there is a kind of a bigness to it, I wouldn't change it because it's really what life is made of. And it feels like it has integrity to stand in the middle of it and say yes. And see if I can breathe and practice myself into the size that's required to be with the kind of complexity that's here. So I feel really grateful to be able to articulate that, you know, to kind of to say what it's like and to say here that that's what I'm doing. I think maybe this is also another definition of listening. That what it means to listen is to allow you to change me, to allow myself to be changed by you, and to fully be able to, as best I can, stand in the place where you're standing and feel the world from where you're feeling it, so that I can include that in my own understanding of what life is like for us. Because of course, life is different for me than it is for you. But if I can find usness, listen to the point of usness being real, my sense, my holding of life is much wider and broader and has more integrity than if I'm in my little defended position, which doesn't feel whole or generous or expansive in the way that it seems to me that aliveness would have me understand.
As a place to end it, I have a new thought growing in me, Lizzie, from what you were just saying about aliveness, which is this. One way of thinking about this is that we each, if we just take you and me, Lizzie, and of course this extends to all of you who are listening, who are alongside us or watching. You, Lizzie, are life, looking out at the world from the place that you are, and I am life looking out of the world from the place that I am. And not only are we in different places, like I'm sitting where I am and you're sitting where you are some distance away, you have grown up in the body, the unique body that you have, surrounded by the unique history and people that you're surrounded by, and I have too. So we are life looking out at the world from different locations. What a mistake it is to imagine that just because I'm here, and so I should be absolutely certain of everything because I'm here, and that makes you wrong and me right. What a mistake it is. And instead, what a possibility there is for life to find out about itself by me doing exactly what you said, me putting myself in your position so that I can ask deeper questions about my position. And inside me, life gets to take on the requisite complexity as it does in you. Rather than it's the mistake to, and this comes back to what George says, it's hard to be alive because it's anxious. And so we want to judge and be sure and have a stance and definitively decide. That's exactly the opposite of what life's unfolding calls for. So I'm so glad to have the life that we each are named back to us, sort of something beyond our individual bodies and experiences, and very grateful to have been in another one of these conversations, Lizzie.
Me too.
With you. Thank you. As you say, I'm changed. One of the reasons why we do this is we're changed by it all the time. I've been so changed by these 379 weekly conversations also. And thank you to all of you who are with us, really, whether you've just listened to the end of your first one of these, or whether you've been with us for 7.5 years, or whether you are with us every week, whether you dip in when it seems like the moment calls for. We're very grateful that you're here with us, and please do be in contact with us, and please feel very, very welcome to share this with people you know, people you care about, people you love. Point them towards turning towards life. It's one of the great delights, isn't it, Lizzie, when we hear from somebody who says, oh, my so-and-so introduced me to this and it really met me. So you may know people who this kind of conversation and these sources would really meet, and you're very, very welcome to share it. And we are going to finish here, and we will be back, all being well. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.